Yes, hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the McLav podcast. My name is Michael. Thank you so much for listening, however you're doing it, wherever you're doing it from. And as always, I thank you so much for doing so. What's the crack? How's it been? How's it been? How have you been? It's been a while. Christmas break has happened. I'm now back in England. I've all my equipment here. I've got some new equipment, things that I'm looking forward to trying out and testing with the podcast. And I didn't bring any of the equipment home over Christmas. I knew I wouldn't bother recording a podcast while I was home. I just wanted to enjoy essentially drinking pints for about a month and a half straight, and that's all I did. Drank myself into oblivion over Christmas. Ate about 2 tons worth of cheese. Put on probably close to a stone, and I had a fantastic time, and I have absolutely no shame or regrets in doing any of the previously mentioned things. But yeah, how have you been? I hope you had a great Christmas, hope you had a great New Year. I don't think we're still saying Happy New Year at this stage of the month. It is, at the time of recording, the 27th of January, so I think I'm a bit late to wish you that one, but you know, all the best anyway. There's been a lot going on. We've missed quite a bit. I was doing sort of regular-ish podcasts there in the run-up to Christmas before coming home, and then the priorities of coursework and radio days and different things that I had to do for uni overtook the podcast. So I think, I'm not sure if I mentioned this already, I think I did. The last podcast was the 23rd of November, and as I say, now we're on the 27th of January, so about 2 months, more or less, and in that time, a lot has happened, and we're going to cover it all. We're going to cover it as much of it as we can, anyway, in this episode. So hopefully you'll stick around. But in an effort to sort of let you know what's coming up, and for me just to practice editing things because I like doing that anyway. I've put together a bit of a rundown over what's happened over the last month or so, and pretty much let you know what's coming up in this episode. So take a listen. And we'll get back and we'll discuss everything mentioned coming up right now.
Argentina, champions of the world! And the nation will tango all night long! Messi will be sainted! France this time, denied, defied!
It is hard to escape the supposition that he has rendered himself today the greatest of all time.
What is the truth about other clubs making offers for you? Some people have said there were no offers at all. I happen to know that there was a gigantic one from Saudi Arabia. I
mean, for example? Like
350 million euros for 2 seasons, is that?
Because true, yes, it's true.
That's a staggering sum of money.
Yes.
Which you turned down.
In that moment, yes.
Pelé, the Brazilian football legend, widely regarded as the greatest player of all time, has died at the age of 82. He'd been in hospital for several weeks being treated for cancer.
This evening, but I think for many football fans around the world, it's the skill above all and the smile that will define this player. He was known as the King, and it does seem a very fitting nickname given the majesty of his skill. And I think for many, he will be more than any other footballer, the player who made the game beautiful.
Every year, these guys fight for their career. You picked a hell of a year to start following the PGA Tour.
I'm fighting to win every time I play.
Whatever gets it done, that's all that matters.
Winning is so hard on the PGA Tour.
At the end of the day, you're playing against the best players in the world.
They want to step on my throw, I want to step on theirs.
It's win or go home.
Beautiful weather.
All it takes is 1 week for your life changes.
Quiet in the house, action.
If I want the game that I love to be played by future generations, the game needs to be pushed forward.
Well, did you get all that? Are you caught up? Have you an idea of what's went on over the past month or so? Because, as I'm sure you can tell, there was a lot. And we'll get into it all. We'll go all the way back to December, the very last week before Christmas and the World Cup. I think the last episode I recorded was posted just before going any further. Just in case you don't know what was involved in that little clip there, we had the World Cup, we had the Piers Morgan and Ronaldo interview, which did come out before one of the last episodes. We have spoke about that, but, you know, Ronaldo's big transfer has happened since then. We had the darts, one of the most incredible bits of sport ever and one of the best bits of commentary ever. Pelé died, and then we have the golf, Netflix golf docuseries trailer. That was at the very end there. So we have a lot of exciting things that have happened that are to look forward to, and some major events with the likes of Pelé. So yeah, let's get in them. Let's go through all of them and, you know, dissect them. I'm sure you've heard hundreds and thousands of different views and opinions, but sure, add mine on top of it. Why the hell not? The World Cup. The Qatar 2022 World Cup. What an event. What a spectacle. For all the drama, for all the off-the-field issues, for all the talk and speculation of whether it was going to be good or not, it turned out to be fantastic. As an on-field product, it turned out to be fantastic. And the final just sort of summed up the whole tournament perfectly. Extra time, penalties, a great penalty shootout. Kylian Mbappe scoring a hat-trick in the World Cup final, the stuff of absolute dreams, only to then have the dream turn into a nightmare when he doesn't win the tournament, when France lose to Argentina in that fashion. And it was just, I mean, we were out for the day while it was on. We were in the 12 pubs Christmas, and we're sort of going from pub to pub, watching a bit in this pub, and then the second half in this pub, and then extra time in another one. And it was just surreal, because every time you sort of looked away from the screen and looked back again, something dramatic had happened, and it was just, the landscape of the match was completely different. In the space between one pub, I think we missed two goals. And the time it took me to get a pint anyway, I missed Mbappe's hat-trick goal. I thought it was a highlight from something earlier in the game or something earlier in the tournament. I didn't know what I was looking at on the screen. And then Messi finally gets his hand on the World Cup trophy, and undoubtedly, let's just call a spade as it is now, cemented himself as the greatest player of all time. The debate is done, dusted, locked away, and only to be taken out if anyone, you know, if there's a new goat down the line. Let's just put it that way, because the debate between Ronaldo and Messi is over. Messi practically carried Argentina to a World Cup, and then the scenes that happened in Buenos Aires after, and all the videos of the millions of people on the street, the celebrations, and then all the players returning back to their Premier League clubs, because again, this was just in the middle of the football season. It was just bizarre that it just happened like this. And then, you know, you have the World Cup final on a Sunday, and then you've got like the FA Cup or the League Cup on a Tuesday. It just didn't make any sense, but it was great. I mean, the level of, the amount of football we got to watch over Christmas was just spectacular. So Messi did that, and while Messi was doing that, Ronaldo was making a bit of a fool out of himself, which he has, over the past 6 months, has really gotten very good at. He is now no longer a player of Manchester United, which I think he just left the last time I recorded a podcast, and went to the World Cup, didn't win it, got taken off, actually got subbed during games, got left on the bench, and it just looked like his attitude had completely taken over him. His ego has just swallowed him whole, has got the better of him, and Portugal went home early, Ronaldo went home early, and now, even though Piers Morgan said in a million years he would never do that, he is playing in Saudi Arabia. He's playing for Al Nassr in the Saudi Super League or the Saudi Football League. I can't remember the exact name of it. But it's not the move anybody wanted to see Ronaldo make. Of course he could do it. You know, he's one of the biggest names in sport. Anybody would throw the checkbook at him to get him to come play. For the amount of money he'd make off shirt sales and commercial aspects alone would make it worth it. But from a footballing standpoint, his reputation is beyond tarnished. And just last night or the night before, Al Nassr were put out of the Saudi Super Cup. So there's no trophy there for Ronaldo either. So it's been a tough stretch for him. He made a fool out of himself in that interview with Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan made a fool out of himself, because he just generally is anyway, bit of a fool. Saying that Ronaldo would never go for the big move, the big money move. He would never move to Saudi Arabia because it's not about the money. And now he has to constantly backpedal on Twitter and attempt to defend his stance of Ronaldo and agree with what he's done, and just lives a very sad life with his fatuations towards Ronaldo. But nonetheless, that was the World Cup. That was the football side of things. Just, as I said, incredible tournament. And, you know, with the Euros now in a couple of years, the next World Cup is in the States. Across the USA, Canada, and Mexico. And that tournament is just going to be incredible. I think there's a few countries that are just going to have teams right at the very peak of their powers, and will be chomping at the bit to get their hands on the World Cup trophy then. And that, you know, I know we're looking 4 years down the line here and many things can change, but that'll definitely be one to look forward to. So that was that. And then we heard the darts commentary, Wayne Mardell's dart commentary from the, it can't be a double nine dart leg, but you know, from the World Darts Championship final. And Michael van Gerwen steps up, misses his nine darter by a fraction, literally is just out, and then Michael Smith, hits the double 12, and just sends the whole Ali-Pali into absolute rapture. The clip went incredibly viral. It went all over the place. It was in America. You people reacting to, like, can't believe I've never watched the darts. Can't believe I didn't know darts were like this. But that's probably a once in a lifetime event to have something as ridiculously good as that. There was about eight of us watching it when it happened, and even though we didn't really care who won, just jumping up and celebrating the darts just felt bizarre, but it felt brilliant because it was such a rush. It was just unbelievable. And the commentary commentary now lives in the realms of, you know, Aguero, you know, like, that's how good that was. When I don't know why, but he just started shouting, "I can't speak!" Like, sometimes they say silence is the best option for a commentator, but whatever Wayne Mardell produced that night was just incredible. He put his own mark on that clip, and to be fair, that clip would be nothing without his reaction. So the silence policy was best ignored in that instance, and it just produced an all-time moment. Now, of course, didn't we go then straight up and put the dartboard up and try to recreate it, and you can barely hit single one, never mind, you know, a treble 20. It really humbles you when you try to play a sport or try out a sport that you can see people doing with complete and utter ease, you know, on the TV. It's the same with golf. Watching a lot of golf, and then I go out on the course and I duff the ball 3 yards in front of me, and I'm like, why can't I just do exactly what they're doing on the TV? But that's why they're professionals. That's why they're making big money about it, and I'm only just sitting here talking about it. There's a difference to perfecting crafts. But yeah, spent a lot of time over Christmas playing darts, practicing darts, not getting any better at darts, and I've still never had a 180 in my life. So that's a goal for this year. Try and hit a 180. Now, I say this year like I'm going to spend the whole year practicing. I won't. I'll do exactly what I do every single other year, which is play darts until about the end of January, middle of February. Forget about it entirely, and then in December start playing it again when the darts come on again. Because that's just, you know, I'm full of phases and a bandwagon. And that's just it. We had Pele pass away on, I think it was New Year's Eve or the day before. And his funeral was massive. He was the original GOAT. I do think Messi has gone past what Pele did now. You know, you always used to hear rumours or read things that Pele's goal total was him counting goals in training and pre-season friendly matches and, you know, dead rubber games that just didn't really count for anything, and that's where his goal total come for. So his official goal count will never be known. Never truly. You know, it could be slightly skewed, but nonetheless, an absolute legend of the game. One of the biggest names in the sport, in the sporting world in general, not just in football. And his funeral was massive, was broadcast on TV. And now there's plans in place to have a stadium or an arena named after Pele in every country in the world, according to the FIFA president, the bald guy. I forget his name. Really should know that. Anyway, we'll move on. I forget. But yeah, Pele, no longer with us, but an absolute legend of the game anyway. What else did we have we were talking about? We were talking about the golf. So I was talking there about playing golf and enjoying golf. There's a new documentary being released in about 2 weeks' time. And it's following the exact same sort of format as Formula One Drive to Survive has. Netflix are really honing in on this. They've seen the success of that series, and sports are now wanting to get involved with Netflix as well. So it's a two-way street. It just seems to be beneficial for everybody. If you want your sport to grow in popularity, get a Netflix behind-the-scenes series. Netflix wants more people to sit down and spend time on their streaming service. Make a sports docuseries. It just, they're complementing each other so perfectly. So we had Formula One, Drive to Survive, which the fifth season of that I think is actually out soon as well. Then the tennis, Breakpoint, it was released. I only watched one episode-ish. I didn't even watch the full episode of it. It didn't grip me like I thought it would. I'll maybe have to give it another go when I'm not as tired. And then we've got the golf, Full Swing. It's called the Full Swing Golf docuseries, whatever you want to call it, documentary. And it's like, I mean, as you heard in the trailer, they genuinely couldn't, like Hollywood script level, could not have dreamt of a better year to start covering the PGA Tour. They had the live drama, they had Rory McIlroy becoming a spokesperson, they had all, like, some of the biggest names leaving to go and join this new tour, and the drama that caused both on and off the course is just incredible. I mean, it's still spilling over just this week. I mean, McIlroy and Patrick Reed, I wouldn't call it a spat. You know, there was a disagreement on the range. McIlroy refused to shake Patrick Reed's hand because he's, like, literally being sued by him or by his lawyers or something along those lines. And Patrick Reed tossed a tee at McIlroy's direction, and as always, social media went ballistic with it. McIlroy's in the documentary, which he the whole way through said he wouldn't do it, wasn't a part of it, didn't want anything to do with it, and supposedly got convinced in like the last sort of end of the season that he would take part in it. So he's been mic'd up for a few things. You'll get to see a couple of behind the scenes efforts from him, and the insight from that alone will be incredible. Because he was just at the forefront of absolutely everything golf-related last year. Didn't win a major. Had a late surge at Augusta. Was leading on the final day of the Open in St. Andrews. And, you know, couldn't hit a barn door with his putter. Two-putted just about everything. As Cam Smith, come from behind, overtook him. McIlroy finished third. And then like a week, 2 weeks later, Cam Smith joined the LIV Tour. So he won the Clara Jug and then signed on to the LIV Tour for like $100 million. It's not a bad week, a bad month, is it? You know, becoming the champion golfer of the year and then just pocketing $100 million. Some of the money that was being thrown at these fellas was, it's so silly that of course they're going to take it. Because that's more money than they would even dream. And people say, it's not about the money. It shouldn't be about the money. It should be about playing. Okay. But if you can do the exact same thing what you're doing, maybe a few times less a year and earn five times more, then of course, even 10 times more, do you know what I mean? Of course they're going to take it. So yes, a lot of people disagreed with it. I'm not necessarily a fan of the new format and the music on courses and the teams and the 54 holes instead of 72. That's not necessarily a product that I feel like I would enjoy, as opposed to just, and I know it sounds silly because why would you not, as just plain old regular golf, but that's just what golf is. It doesn't need, you know, jazzed up, if that's the word I should use. It doesn't need, if it's not broke, don't fix it, is what I'm trying to say. Because they're tinkering with this new idea and, you know, it's not exactly going well for them. They were free, watching for free on YouTube. They're now signed up to a TV network in the States that literally no one's ever heard of. And I think you have to pay for it now. So they'll be getting some money back in that way. But that goes against one of their promises already, because for that there'll be adverts. It was advert free on YouTube, and you've just, I mean, there's over 1 billion people on YouTube compared to what maybe a couple of 100,000 watch that CW channel in America. So they've just massively reduced their potential viewership there. And I mean, they have the money to back it. So I think they just wanted to say they've got a TV deal for the sake of saying they've got one, but doesn't look like it's going to work in their favor. I would imagine the remainder of the LIV Tour will be very short-lived. That wasn't a pun at all, pardon me. So that's the golf over. I mean, the golf chat anyway. I sort of got in a bit deep there, got into a bit of a rant. Didn't mean to, but these things happen. What else have we got going on? We have the Gaelic is back up and running. Well, Intercounty Gaelic is anyway. We had the pre-season tournaments. The McKenna Cup was on. The National League starts this weekend. Then we also had the absolute farce, which was the All-Ireland Club football final on Sunday past. Between Glenn and Kilmacud Crooks from Dublin. Glenn from Derry, Kilmacud from Dublin. And if you don't know what happened, basically at the end, Kilmacud made a couple of substitutions, but they ended up with 16. Gaelic games is a 15-on-15 sport. 16 players were on the field for Kilmacud at the end, for the very last free kick that Glenn were taking. And essentially, Glenn have now lodged an appeal. And there's a potential that the actual final could be replayed, which would just be ludicrous if it did happen. Glenn, of course, absolutely within their rights to appeal, and I'm sort of glad that they did, because the GAA just left it up to them. The GAA just made a mess of the whole thing. But the fact that a final could potentially be replayed over the head of it is a bit mental. I would much prefer to see a formal, proper apology to Glenn an action plan put in place moving forward so that this never happens again, and just sort of leave it at that. I don't think it warrants a full replay of the match. I mean, yes, the rules were broken. Literally, it's plain and simple, black and white in the rule book. The rules were broken. But what does the punishment have to be for something like that? It should not be the full replaying of the game. It should be a slap on the wrists for the officials for not controlling the situation properly, and an apology to Glenn and move on with it. Because I can imagine that the sort of lingering feeling around both communities over the past couple of days, even though both of them have probably been out celebrating, been on the drink for 2 or 3 days following the game, I said probably, definitely, that sort of lingering dread in Kilmacud and hope maybe for some of the members up in Glen that they might get another bite at the cherry, they might get another go at it, wasn't fair and was just keeping people in limbo for no reason other than the fact that the GAA wouldn't get their finger out and make a decision. That's the most shambolic thing of all. And then you have people. Then you have people online trying to blame Glenn as a club, as if this was also some part, like somehow their fault. I've seen people say that Glenn lodging the objection at 11 o'clock at night is a disgrace. The deadline wasn't until Wednesday, sometime Wednesday. I think it was midday, lunchtime Wednesday. So what's wrong with lodging the appeal on the Tuesday night? That's still well within their time frame, well within their rights. And they're allowed to do that. So the fact that people were blaming them for almost trying to throw Kilmacud off, thinking, oh, they're not going to appeal. Oh, wait, they did appeal. So what? They knew the deadline. Everybody knew the deadline. Objecting by then was completely fine. I would love to see a scenario where Glenn get offered the replay but don't take it, because winning an All-Ireland like that would just carry one of the biggest asterisks of all time, that it was won in a replay but the first match didn't end in a draw. I would love to see a situation where the GAA are like, right, fine, you can have your replay. And Glenn said, no. Our line from the get-go was that we didn't want one, but we felt morally obliged that we had to appeal this and object because you as an organisation weren't going to do anything about it. So that's how I feel about it. The blame does not lie with Glenn. For the most part, doesn't lie with Kilmacud either. If the player in question seen his name on the fourth official's board and didn't come off, yes, that's his fault. But as a club, should the rest of the players be punished? Absolutely not. They worked hard on the day. They were the better team on the day. Glenn had their chances, didn't put them away. And ultimately it cost them in the end. But I don't think the blame lies with either the two teams or the clubs. It lies with the GAA and the officials for not having a proper command over what was going on. And people will look, will fine comb through the rule book and say it's a grey area. You always hear this when there's a rules debate. It's a grey area. We don't know what's going on. You should know what's going on. Rules should be as plain and as simple so that if anything ever recurs on the pitch, there is no question. You go to this page in the rule book, you find this chapter, and it tells you exactly what's going on. It shouldn't be down to players, it shouldn't be down to managers to police what's going on the field, how many players are on the field. It should be up to the referees, the fourth officials and the linesmen to take a look and say, hang on, that's not right. The game can't proceed at this present moment because of that. That's the long and short of it, in my, non-expert opinion. But seeing as everyone else is throwing their hat in the ring, part of the conversation, I will too. And another thing everyone's talking about, and unfortunately everyone's talking about, and I have to talk about it, is Manchester United's week-long title race. That's right. I got carried away. I hold my hands up, I will admit, I was one. I was one of the many people who thought United had a chance. We beat Man City. Again, more controversy in that game. When you're talking about rules, you're talking about grey areas. Flipping hell, that's the greyest of them all. Bruno Fernandes' goal when Rashford was blatantly in an offside position. Did he interfere with the player or not? If we're being honest about the whole thing, yes, he did. If I'm speaking from a Manchester United fan point of view, no, he did not. Of course he didn't. The defenders just weren't asked enough to go get the ball. But if you're talking like someone who has a set of eyes and a brain, then yes, Rashford did interfere with the play and Bruno's goal should not have stood. Regardless. United beat City 2-1, and then it started. The conversations, the tweets, the graphics, the build-up to the game against Arsenal. Except that following the game against City, United will go on to draw midweek against Crystal Palace following a stunning last-minute free kick from, I think it was Michael Olise. I think that's who scored it. Just no one on planet Earth was stopping that. Casemiro, in the process, would go on to get himself booked and subsequently be out for the game on Sunday past against Arsenal, which United would go on to lose. There, I said it. I had to get it off my chest. United would go on to lose to Arsenal and inevitably put an end to the week-long title race that United were bidding for. Who were they racing against? Well, they were racing against Arsenal, who are steaming ahead, foot flat to the floor, and Arsenal are just not looking backwards at anybody. They beat United convincingly with a far better team on the day. United were chasing the game for pretty much all of it. I don't really remember a spell where United felt like they were the most team in control. The team most in control, should I say. It was always Arsenal's game. United were passive. Yes, they missed Casemiro big time. Was he the difference? Would he have been the difference? I don't think so. I think Arsenal's strengths were better than United's strengths. And they did a better job of exploiting our weaknesses. Now, did United also somewhat beat themselves? Absolutely. Anthony is perhaps one of the most overrated footballers ever. I don't know how we can expect, what we should be expecting from him, should I say. He just kills the flow of the game, doesn't seem bothered, and reminds me somewhat of Tony Martial in terms of attitude. Now, that seems harsh on Martial because he's been at the club now for, it's like 10 years this year, I think it is, 9 years maybe, which is insane. But there's just, he just goes through phases where he just doesn't look bothered. Do you know what I mean? Anthony just, he did a few tricks. He did, you know, a couple of step overs and whatever else, and TikTok and all the clips go wild with it. But plain and simple, he hasn't done anything that really benefits United's play. Rashford is on the form of his life. Rashford gets the ball, he goes direct, he makes his way to the net, and tries his best to get a shot off. Anthony is the most predictable footballer on planet Earth. You know what he's going to do with the ball every single time he gets it. He just stops the ball, kills play, plays a sideways pass. What we were expecting from him was someone who was direct, someone who wasn't afraid to take on players, be dangerous down the wings, and he hasn't done it. And then with Weghorst in, of all people, a signing which I don't necessarily hate. He seems like he's a good, positive attitude guy. He seems like he's gelled with the squad relatively quickly. And we know that he's not going to come in and get 10, 15 goals. We just, like, it's realistic of us to expect that he's not going to do that, should I say. But if he can help in the press, if he can help take some of the workload off Rashford to allow him to move more freely and sort of conserve his energy better, well then, that's no bad thing. Is he the long-term solution? Absolutely not. Do United have a league-winning squad? No. I won't say absolutely not. I'll say no. I'd say we're not too far off it. I'd say there's two, three signings that need made in key positions. Midfield, striker, and potentially a better winger than Anthony that would see us in the right stead moving forward. Do Arsenal have the league wrapped up? Not necessarily. But City will be the team to chase them down, not United. I know it sounds like I'm dismissing Newcastle. I think United and Newcastle are on relatively level par. And then it's the next step up to City. And then Arsenal. Just as the way the league stands at the minute. I know it sounds like I'm being pessimistic as a United fan, even though we did just beat City. And maybe it's the scar tissue of the last 10 years of fear and disappointment as a United fan that are making me feel this way. Where sometimes we get ourselves into promising positions and then it just all instantly comes crumbling down around us. Maybe that's what it is. Okay? Maybe it's just a little bit of, PTSD or PFSD. Post-Fergie stress disorder. I've just thought that on the spot and I will now definitely be using that moving forward. PFSD, post-Fergie stress disorder, where Manchester United can at any one moment in time do something that will completely and utterly sucker punch you, ruin your weekend and just leave you feeling like crap. PFSD, it'll be officially diagnosed from here on out and I imagine that 95% of people that have ever visited Old Trafford over the past 10 years have and do experience it. So that's about it. That's about everything that I wanted to talk about. Going forward, more podcasts hopefully coming on a more regular basis. I have all the equipment back with me now, as I was saying at the start. I'm here in England now for the next couple of months. Get all the work done, get the graduation sorted. That is the plan. That's what I'll be doing more. And I have to do podcasts on all four of my uni work, so it all sort of ties in together that this is what I've been doing a lot of the time. I was on an episode of Keepy Uppies with Richie McGee just a couple of weeks ago. If you want to go and check that out on Richie's page, that was a great conversation just about football in general, my time playing football and sort of podcasting and plans for the future and the growth of his podcast, which is just skyrocketing. So go on ahead on over and give Richie a listen and a follow. And as for this podcast, if you want to keep up to date, I'll hopefully get the Instagram page a little bit more active now at the McLaugh podcast on there, Michael Lavery on Facebook, where I'll be posting and sharing a lot of these things. So yeah, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I know it was up and down and it maybe got a bit dry in the middle, but that's just the way it is. That's just the way these conversations go. If you agree with anything, disagree with anything, let me know. And we can fuel a debate, get a conversation started. As Richie says, that's what it's all about. Better conversation. So thanks very much for listening. And I'll see you all in the next episode of the McLaugh Podcast. Cheers.